He turned to Martin and gestured for him to show the new apprentices out. "Thank you, everyone," he said, and left the room through the door behind his desk. The craftmasters followed his lead. Then Martin ushered the former wards to the door. They chatted together excitedly, relieved and delighted that they had been selected by the craftmasters of their choice. Will hung back behind the others, hesitating as he passed the desk where that sheet of paper still lay. He stared at it for a moment, as if somehow he could see through to the words written on the reverse side. Then he felt that same sensation that he had felt earlier, that someone was watching him. He looked up and found himself staring into the dark eyes of the ranger, who remained behind the Baron's high-backed chair, almost invisible in that strange cloak of his. Will shuddered in a sudden frisson of fear and hurried out of the room. 5. It was long after midnight. The flickering torches around the castle yard, already replaced once, had begun to burn low again. Will had watched patiently for hours, waiting for this moment, when the light was uncertain and the guards were yawning in the last hour of their shift. The day had been one of the worst he could remember. While his year-mates celebrated, enjoying their feast and then spending their time in light-hearted horseplay through the castle and the village, Will had slipped away to the silence of the forest, a kilometre or so from the castle walls. There, in the dim green coolness beneath the trees, he had spent the afternoon reflecting bitterly on the events of the choosing, nursing the deep pain of disappointment, and wondering what the ranger's paper said. As the long day wore on, and the shadows began to lengthen in the open fields beside the forest, he came to a decision. He had to know what was on the paper, and he had to know tonight. Once night fell, he made his way back to the castle, avoiding villagers and castle folk alike, and secreted himself in the branches of the fig tree again. On the way, he slipped unnoticed into the kitchens and helped himself to bread, cheese and apples. He munched moodily on these, barely tasting them, as the evening passed and the castle began to settle down for the night. He observed the movements of the guards, getting a feeling for their timing as they went on their regular rounds. In addition to the guard troop, there was a sergeant on duty at the doorway of the tower that led to Baron Arold's quarters. But he was overweight and sleepy, and there was little chance that he would pose a risk to Will. After all, he had no intention of using the door or the stairway. Over the years, his insatiable curiosity, and a penchant for going places where he wasn't supposed to, had developed within him the skill of moving across seemingly open space without being seen. As the wind stirred the upper branches of the trees, they created moving patterns in the moonlight, patterns that Will now used to great effect. He instinctively matched his movement to the rhythm of the trees, blending easily into the pattern of the yard, becoming part of it, and so being concealed by it. In a way, the lack of obvious cover made his task a little easier. The fat sergeant didn't expect anyone to be moving across the open space of the yard, so, not expecting to see anyone, he failed to do so. Breathless, Will flattened himself against the rough stone of the tower wall. The sergeant was barely 5 meters away, and Will could hear his heavy breathing. But a small buttress in the wall hid him from the man's sight. He studied the wall in front of him, craning back to look up. The Baron's office window was a long way up, and farther around the tower. To reach it, he would have to climb up, then work his way across the face of the wall, to a spot beyond the point where the sergeant stood guard, then up again to the window. He licked his lips nervously. Unlike the smooth inner walls of the tower, the huge blocks of stone that comprised the tower's outer wall had large gaps between them, Climbing would be no problem. He'd have plenty of foot and hand holds all the way up. In some places, the stone would have been worn smooth by the weather over the years, he knew, and he'd have to go carefully. But he'd climbed all the other three towers at some time in the past, and he expected no real difficulty with this one. But this time, if he was seen, he wouldn't be able to pass it off as a prank. He would be climbing in the middle of the night to a part of the castle where he had no right to be. After all, the Baron didn't post guards on this tower for the fun of it. People were supposed to stay away unless they had business here. He rubbed his hands together nervously. What could they do to him? He had already been passed over in the choosing. Nobody wanted him. He was condemned to a life in the fields already. What could be worse than that? But there was a nagging doubt at the back of his mind. He wasn't absolutely sure that he was condemned to that life. A faint spark of hope still remained. Perhaps the Baron would relent. Perhaps, if Will pleaded with him in the morning, and explained about his father and how important it was for him to be accepted for battle school, there was a very faint chance that his wish would be granted. And then, once he was accepted, he could show how his eagerness and dedication would make him a worthy student, until his growing spurt happened. On the other hand, if he were caught in the next few minutes, not even that small chance would remain. He had no idea what they would do to him if he were caught, but he could be reasonably sure that it wouldn't involve being accepted into battle school. He hesitated, needing some slight extra push to get him going. It was the fat sergeant who provided it. Will heard the heavy intake of breath, the shuffling of the man's studded boots against the flagstones, as he gathered his equipment together, and he realized that the sergeant was about to make one of his irregular circuits of his beat. Usually, this entailed going a few meters around the tower to either side of the doorway, then returning to his original position. It was more for the purpose of staying awake than anything else, but Will realized that it would bring them face to face within the next few seconds if he didn't do something. Quickly, easily, he began to swarm up the wall. He made the first 5 meters in a matter of seconds, spread out against the rough stone like a giant four-legged spider. Then, hearing the heavy footsteps directly below him, he froze, clinging to the wall in case some slight noise might alert the sentry. In fact, it seemed that the sergeant had heard something. He paused directly below the point where Will clung, peering into the night, trying to see past the dappled moving shadows cast by the moon and the swaying trees. But, as Will had thought the night before, people seldom look up. The sergeant, eventually satisfied that he had heard nothing significant, continued to march slowly around the tower. That was the chance Will needed. It also gave him the opportunity to move across the tower face so that he was directly below the window he wanted. Hands and feet finding purchase easily, he moved almost as fast as a man could walk, all the time going higher and higher up the tower wall. At one point, he looked down, and that was a mistake. Despite his good head for heights, his vision swam slightly as he saw how far he had come, and how far below him the hard flagstones of the castle yard were. The sergeant was coming back into view, a tiny figure when seen from this height. Will blinked the moment of vertigo away, and continued to climb, perhaps a little more slowly, and with a little more care than before. There was a heart-stopping moment when, stretching his right foot to a new foothold, his left boot slipped on the weather-rounded edge of the massive building blocks, and he was left clinging by his hands alone as he desperately scrabbled for a foothold. Then he recovered and kept moving. He felt a surge of relief as his hands finally closed over the stone window ledge, and he heaved himself up and into the room. swinging his legs over the sill and dropping lightly inside. The Baron's office was deserted, of course. The three-quarter moon streamed light in through the big window, and there, on the desk where the Baron had left it, was the single sheet of paper that held the answer to Will's future. Nervously, he glanced around the room. The Baron's huge, high-backed chair stood like a sentry behind the desk. The few other pieces of furniture loomed dark and motionless. On one wall, a portrait of one of the Baron's ancestors glared down at him, accusingly. He shook off these fanciful thoughts and crossed quickly to the desk, his soft boots making no noise on the bare boards of the floor. The sheet of paper, bright white with the reflected moonlight, was within reach. "Just look at it, read it and go," he told himself. That was all he had to do. He stretched out a hand for it. His fingers touched it, and a hand shot out of nowhere and seized him by the wrist. Will shouted aloud in fright. His heart leaped into his mouth, and he found himself looking up into the cold eyes of Halt, the ranger. Where had he come from? Will had been sure there had been nobody else in the room, and there had been no sound of a door opening. Then he remembered how the ranger could wrap himself in that strange, mottled, grey-green cloak of his, and seemed to melt into the background, blending with the shadows until he was invisible. Not that it mattered how Halt had done it. The real problem was that he had caught Will, here in the Baron's office, and that meant the end to all Will's hopes. "Thought you might try something like this," said the ranger in a low voice. Will, his heart pounding from the shock of the last few moments, said nothing. He hung his head in shame and despair. "Do you have anything to say?" Halt asked him, and Will shook his head, unwilling to look up and meet that dark, penetrating gaze. Halt's next words confirmed Will's worst fears. "Well, let's see what the Baron thinks about this," he said.
"Please, Halt, not..."
Then Will stopped. There was no excuse for what he had done, and the least he could do was face his punishment like a man, like a warrior, like his father, he thought. The ranger studied him for a moment. Will thought he saw a brief flicker of... recognition? Then the eyes darkened once more. "What?" Halt said curtly. Will shook his head.
"Nothing."
The ranger's grip was like iron around his wrist as he led Will out the door and onto the wide, curving staircase that led up to the Baron's living quarters. The sentries at the head of the stairs looked up in surprise at the sight of the grim-faced ranger and the boy beside him. At a brief signal from Halt, they stood aside and opened the doors into the Baron's apartment. The room was brightly lit, and for a moment, Will looked around in confusion. He was sure he had seen the lights go out on this floor while he waited and watched in the tree. Then he saw the heavy drapes across the window and understood. In contrast to the Baron's sparsely furnished working quarters below, this room was a comfortable clutter of settees, footstools, carpets, tapestries, and armchairs. In one of these, Baron Arald sat, reading through a pile of reports. He looked up from the page he was holding as Halt entered with his captive.
"So, you were right," said the Baron, and Halt nodded. "Just as I said, my lord, came across the castle yard like a shadow, dodged the sentry as if he wasn't there, and came up the tower wall like a spider."
The Baron set the report down on a side table and leaned forward.
"He climbed the tower, you say?"
he asked, a trifle incredulously.
"No rope, no ladder, my lord. Climbed it as easily as you get on your horse in the morning. Easier, in fact," Halt said, with just the ghost of a smile.
The Baron frowned. He was a little overweight, and sometimes he needed help getting on his horse after a late night.
He obviously wasn't amused by Holtz reminding him of the fact. "Well now," he said, looking sternly at Will, "this is a serious matter."
Will said nothing. He wasn't sure if he should agree or disagree. Either course had its dangers. But he wished Holt hadn't put the Baron in a bad mood by referring to his weight.
It certainly wouldn't make things any better for him. "So, what shall we do with you, young Will?" the Baron continued.
He rose from his chair and began to pace. Will looked up at him, trying to gauge his mood. The strong, bearded face told him nothing. The Baron stopped his pacing and fingered his beard thoughtfully.
"Tell me, young Will," he said, facing away from the miserable boy. "What would you do in my place? What would you do with a boy who broke into your office in the middle of the night and tried to steal an important document?"
"I wasn't stealing, my lord."
The denial burst from Will before he could contain it. The Baron turned to him, one eyebrow raised in apparent disbelief. Will continued weakly,
"I just wanted to see it, that's all."
"Perhaps so," said the Baron, that eyebrow still raised. "But you haven't answered my question. What would you do in my place?"
Will hung his head again. He could plead. He could apologize. He could ask for mercy. He could try to explain. But then he squared his shoulders and came to a decision. He had known the consequences of being caught, and he had chosen to take the risk. He had no right now to plead for forgiveness.
"My lord," he said, hesitantly, knowing that this was a decisive moment in his life.
The Baron regarded him, still half-turned from the window.
"Yes," he said,
and Will somehow found the resolve to go on.
"My lord, I don't know what I'd do in your place. I do know there is no excuse for my actions, and I will accept whatever punishment you decide."
As he spoke, he raised his face to look the Baron in the eye, and in doing so, he caught the Baron's quick glance to Holt. There was something in that glance, he saw. Strangely, it was almost a look of approval or agreement. Then it was gone.
"Any suggestions, Holt?" the Baron asked, in a carefully neutral tone.
Will looked at the ranger now. His face was stern, as it always was. The grizzled grey beard and short hair made him seem even more disapproving, more ominous.
"Perhaps we should show him the paper he was so keen to see, my lord," he said, producing the single sheet from inside his sleeve.
The Baron allowed a smile to break through.
"Not a bad idea," he said. "I suppose, in a way, it does spell out his punishment, doesn't it?"
Will glanced from one man to the other. There was something going on here that he didn't understand. The Baron seemed to think that what he had just said was rather amusing. Holt, on the other hand, wasn't sharing in the fun.
"If you say so, my lord," he replied evenly.
The Baron waved a hand at him impatiently.
"Take a joke, Holt, take a joke. Well, go on and show him the paper."
The ranger crossed the room and handed Will the sheet he had risked so much to see. His hand trembled as he took it. His punishment? But how had the Baron known he would deserve punishment before the actual event? He realized that the Baron was watching him expectantly. Holt, as ever, was an impassive statue. Will unfolded the sheet and read the words Holt had written there.
"The boy, Will, has the potential to be trained as a ranger. I will accept him as my apprentice."
6. Will stared at the words on the paper in utter confusion. His first reaction was one of relief. He wasn't to be condemned to a lifetime of farm work, and he wasn't to be punished for his actions in the Baron's study. Then that initial sense of relief gave way to a sudden nagging doubt. He knew nothing about rangers, beyond myth and superstition. He knew nothing about Halt, apart from the fact that the grim, grey-cloaked figure had made him feel nervous whenever he was around. Now it seemed he was being assigned to spend all his time with him, and he wasn't sure that he liked the idea at all. He looked up at the two men. The Baron, he could see, was smiling expectantly. Apparently, he felt that Will should greet his decision as good news. He couldn't see Halt's face clearly. The deep cowl of his cloak left his face in shadow. The Baron's smile faded slightly. He appeared a little puzzled by Will's reaction to the news, or rather, his lack of any visible reaction.
"Well, what do you say, Will?" he asked, in an encouraging tone.
Will drew a deep breath. "Thank you, sir, my lord," he said uncertainly. What if the Baron's earlier joke about the note containing his punishment was more serious than he thought? Maybe being assigned to be Halt's apprentice was the worst punishment he could have chosen. But the Baron certainly didn't look as if he thought so. He seemed to be very pleased with the idea, and Will knew he wasn't an unkind man. The Baron gave a little sigh of pleasure as he lowered himself into an armchair. He looked up at the ranger and gestured toward the door.
"Perhaps you might give us a few moments alone, Halt. I'd like to have a word with Will in private," he said.
The ranger bowed gravely.
"Certainly, my lord," he said,
the voice coming from deep inside the cowl. He moved, silently as ever, past Will and out through the door that led to the corridor outside. The door closed behind him with barely a sound, and Will shivered. The man was uncanny.
"Sit down, Will."
The Baron gestured to one of the low armchairs facing his own. Will sat nervously on the edge of it, as if poised for flight. The Baron noted his body language and sighed.
"You don't seem very pleased with my decision," he said, sounding disappointed.
The reaction puzzled Will. He wouldn't have thought a powerful figure like the Baron would care, one way or another, what an insignificant ward would think about his decisions. He didn't know how to answer, so he sat in silence, until finally the Baron continued.
"Would you prefer to work as a farmhand?" he asked.
He couldn't believe that a lively, energetic boy like this could possibly prefer such a dull, uneventful life. But maybe he was wrong. Will hurriedly reassured him on that score. "No, sir," he said hastily.
The Baron made a small, questioning gesture with his hands. "Well then, would you prefer that I punished you somehow for what you've done?"
Will started to speak, then realized that his answer might be insulting and stopped. The Baron gestured for him to continue. "It's just that I'm not sure you haven't, sir," he said. Then, noticing the frown that creased the Baron's forehead as he said the words, he hurried on. I don't know much about rangers, sir, and people say..." He let the words trail off. It was obvious that the Baron held Halt in some esteem, and Will didn't think it was politic for him to point out that ordinary people feared rangers and thought they were warlocks. He saw that the Baron was nodding, and a look of understanding had replaced the perplexed expression he had been wearing.
"Of course, people say they're black magicians, don't they?"
he agreed, and Will nodded, not even realizing he was doing so.
"Tell me, Will, do you find Halt to be a frightening person?"
"No, sir," Will said hastily. Then, as the Baron held his gaze, he reluctantly added, "Well, maybe a bit."
The Baron leaned back, steepling his fingers together. Now that he understood the reasons for the boy's reluctance, he berated himself mentally for not foreseeing them. After all, he had a better knowledge of the Ranger Corps than he could expect of a young boy just turned 15, who was subjected to the usual superstitious mutterings of the castle staff.
"The Rangers are a mysterious group of people," he said, "but there's nothing about them to be frightened of, unless you're an enemy of the kingdom."
He could see that the boy was hanging on his every word, and he added jokingly,
"You're not an enemy of the kingdom, are you, Will?"
"No, sir," Will said in sudden fright, and the Baron sighed again. He hated it when people didn't realize he was joking.
Unfortunately, as overlord of the castle, his words were treated with great seriousness by most people.
All right," he said reassuringly. "I know you're not, but believe me, I thought you'd be glad of this appointment. An adventurous lad like you should take to life as a ranger like a duck to water. It's a big opportunity for you, Will."
He paused, studying the boy closely, seeing that he was still uncertain about the whole matter.
"Very few boys are chosen to be apprentice rangers, you know. The opportunity only comes up on rare occasions."
Will nodded, but he still wasn't totally convinced. He thought he owed it to his dream to have one last attempt at battle school. After all, the Baron did seem to be in an uncommonly good mood this evening, in spite of the fact that Will had broken into his office.
"I wanted to be a warrior, sir," he said tentatively. But the Baron shook his head immediately.
"I'm afraid your talents lie in other directions. Holt knew that when he first saw you. That's why he asked for you."
"Oh," said Will. There wasn't much else he could say.
He felt he should be reassured by all that the Baron had said, and to a certain degree he was. But there was still so much uncertainty to it all, he thought.
"It's just that Holt seems to be so grim all the time," he said.
"He certainly doesn't have my sparkling sense of humour," the Baron agreed. Then, as Will looked blankly at him, he muttered something under his breath.
Will wasn't sure what he'd done to upset him, so he thought it best to change the subject.
"But what does a ranger actually do, my lord?" he asked.
Once again, the Baron shook his head.
"That's for Holt to tell you himself. They're a quirky group, and they don't like other people talking about them too much. Now, perhaps you should go back to your quarters and try to get some sleep. You're to report to Holt's cottage at 6 o'clock in the morning."
"Yes, my lord," Will said, rising from his uncomfortable perch on the edge of the chair. He wasn't sure if he was going to enjoy life as a ranger's apprentice, but it appeared he had no choice in the matter.
He bowed to the Baron, who nodded briefly in return. Then he turned away for the door. The Baron's voice stopped him.
"Will, this time, use the stairs."
"Yes, my lord," he replied seriously, and was a little puzzled by the way the Baron rolled his eyes to the sky and muttered to himself again. This time he could make out a few words. It was something about jokes, he thought.
He let himself out through the door. The sentries were still on duty on the landing by the stairs, but Holt was gone. Or at least he appeared to be. With the ranger, you could never be quite certain.
7.
It felt strange to be leaving the castle after all these years. Will turned back at the bottom of the hill, his small bundle of belongings slung over his shoulder, and stared up at the massive walls. Castle Redmond dominated the landscape. Built on top of a small hill, it was a massive, three-sided structure, facing roughly west and with a tower at each of the three corners. In the centre, protected by the three curtain walls, were the castle yard and the keep, a fourth tower that soared above the others and housed the Baron's official quarters and his private living apartments, along with those of his senior officers. The castle was built in ironstone, a rock that was almost indestructible, and, in the low sun of early morning or late afternoon, seemed to glow with an inner red light. It was this characteristic that gave the castle its name, Redmont, or Red Mountain. At the foot of the hill, and on the other side of the Tarbes River, lay Wensley Village, a cheerfully haphazard cluster of houses, with an inn and those craft shops necessary to meet the demands of day-to-day country life, a cooper, wheelwright, smithy, and harness maker. The land around had been cleared for some distance, both to provide farmlands for the villagers to tend, and to prevent enemies from being able to approach unseen. In times of danger, the villagers would drive their flocks across the wooden bridge that spanned the Tarbes, removing the centre span behind them, and seek shelter behind the massive ironstone walls of the castle, protected by the Baron's soldiers and the knights trained in Redmont's battle school. Holt's cottage lay some distance away from both castle and village, nestling under the shelter of the trees at the edge of the forest. The sun was just rising over the trees as Will made his way to the log cabin. A thin spiral of smoke was rising from the chimney, so Will reasoned that Holt was already up and about. He stepped up onto the veranda that ran the length of one side of the house, hesitated for a moment, then, taking a deep breath, he knocked firmly on the door.
"Come in,"
said a voice from inside. Will opened the door and went into the cottage. It was small but surprisingly neat and comfortable-looking inside. He found himself in the main room, a combined living and dining area, with a small kitchen at one end, separated from the main area by a pine bench. There were comfortable chairs ranged around a fire, a well-scrubbed wooden table, and pots and pans that gleamed from much polishing. There was even a vase of brightly coloured wildflowers on the mantel shelf, and the early morning sun streamed cheerfully through a large window. Two other rooms led off the main room. Holt sat in one of the chairs, his booted feet resting on the table.
"At least you're on time,"
he said gruffly.
"Have you had your breakfast yet?"
"Yes, sir," said Will, staring in fascination at the ranger. This was the first time he had ever seen Holt without his grey-green cloak and hood. The ranger was wearing simple brown and grey woollen clothes and soft-looking leather boots. He was older than Will had realised. His hair and beard were short and dark, but peppered with steel-grey flecks. They were both roughly trimmed, and Will thought they looked as if Holt had cut them himself with his hunting knife. The ranger stood up. He was surprisingly small in build. That was something else that Will had never realised. The grey cloak had concealed a lot about Holt. He was slim and not at all tall. In fact, he was considerably shorter than average height. But there was a sense of power and whipcord strength about him, so that his lack of height and bulk didn't make him any less daunting a figure.
"Finished steering?"
asked the ranger suddenly. Will jumped nervously.
"Yes, sir. Sorry, sir," he said.
Holt grunted. He pointed to one of the small rooms Will had noticed as he entered.
"That'll be your room. You can put your things in there."
He moved away to the wood stove in the kitchen area, and Will hesitantly entered the room he had indicated. It was small, but, like the rest of the cottage, it was also clean and comfortable-looking. A small bed lay alongside one wall. There was a wardrobe for clothes and a rough table with a washing basin and jug on it. There was also, Will noticed, another vase of freshly picked wildflowers, adding a bright spot of colour to the room. He put his small bundle of clothes and belongings on the bed and went back into the main room. Holt was still busy by the stove, his back to Will. Will coughed apologetically to attract his attention. Holt continued to stir coffee into a pot on the stove. Will coughed again.
"Got a cold, boy?"
asked the ranger, without turning around.
No, sir.
"Then why are you coughing?" asked Holt, turning around to face him. Will hesitated.
"Well, sir," he began uncertainly, "I just wanted to ask you, what does a ranger actually do?"
"He doesn't ask pointless questions, boy," said Holt. "He keeps his eyes and ears open, and he looks and listens, and eventually, if he hasn't got too much cotton wool between his ears, he learns."
"Oh," said Will. "I see."
He didn't, and even though he realized that this was probably no time to ask more questions, he couldn't help himself, repeating, a little rebelliously, "I just wondered what rangers do, is all."
Holt caught the tone in his voice and turned to him, a strange gleam in his eye.
"Well then, I suppose I'd better tell you," he said. "What rangers do, or more correctly, what rangers' apprentices do, is the housework."
Will had a sinking feeling as the suspicion struck him that he'd made a tactical error.
"The housework?" he repeated.
Holt nodded, looking distinctly pleased with himself.
"That's right. Take a look around."
He paused, gesturing around the interior of the cabin for Will to do as he suggested, then continued,
"See any servants?"
"No, sir,"
Will said slowly.
"No, sir, indeed," Holt said, "because this isn't a mighty castle with a staff of servants. This is a lowly cabin, and it has water to be fetched, and firewood to be chopped, and floors to be swept, and rugs to be beaten. And who do you suppose might do all those things, boy?"
Will tried to think of some answer other than the one which now seemed inevitable. Nothing came to mind, so he finally said, in a defeated tone,
"Would that be me, sir?"
"I believe it would be," the ranger told him, then rattled off a list of instructions crisply. "Bucket there, barrel outside the door, water in the river, axe in the lean-to, firewood behind the cabin, broom by the door, and I believe you can probably see where the floor might be."
"Yes, sir," said Will, beginning to roll up his sleeves.
He'd noticed the water barrel as he approached, obviously holding the day's water supply for the cabin. He estimated that it would hold 20 or 30 buckets full. With a sigh, he realized he was going to have a busy morning. As he walked outside, the empty bucket in one hand, he heard the ranger say contentedly as he poured himself a mug of coffee and sat down again,
"I'd forgotten how much fun having an apprentice can be."
Will couldn't believe that such a small and seemingly neat cottage could generate so much cleaning and general maintenance. After he had filled the water barrel with fresh river water, 31 buckets full, he chopped wood from a stack of logs behind the cabin, piling the split firewood into a neat stack. He swept out the cabin, then, after Holt decided that the rug on the living room floor needed beating, he rolled it up, carried it outside, and draped it over a rope slung between two trees, beating it savagely so that clouds of dust flew from it. From time to time, Holt leaned out the window to give him encouragement, which usually consisted of curt comments such as,
"You've missed a bit on the left side," or, "Put some energy into it, boy."
When the rug had been replaced on the floor, Holt decided that several of his cooking pots didn't gleam with sufficient intensity.
"We'll have to give them a bit of a scouring,"
he said, more or less to himself. Will knew by now that this translated to,
"You'll have to give them a bit of a scouring."
So, without a word, he took the pots to the river's edge and half filled them with water and fine sand, scouring and polishing the metal until it gleamed. Holt, meanwhile, had moved to a canvas chair on the veranda, where he sat reading through a tall pile of what looked to be official communications. Passing by once or twice, Will noticed that several of the papers bore crests and coats of arms, while the vast majority were headed with a simple oak leaf design. When Will returned from the riverbank, he held the ports up for Halt's inspection. The ranger grimaced at his distorted reflection in the bright copper surface.
Not bad. Can see my own face in it, he said, then added, without a hint of a smile, may not be such a good thing.
Will said nothing. With anyone else, he might have suspected it was a joke, but with Halt, you simply couldn't tell. Halt studied him for a second or two. Then his shoulders lifted slightly in a shrug, and he gestured for Will to return the pots to the kitchen. Will was halfway through the door when he heard Halt behind him say,
That's odd.
Thinking the ranger might be talking to him, Will paused at the door.
I beg your pardon, he said suspiciously.
Each time Halt had found a new chore for him to attend to, he had seemed to begin the instruction with a statement like,
How unusual. The living room rug is full of dust. Or, I do believe the stove is in dire need of a new supply of firewood.
It was an affectation that Will had found more than a little annoying over the day, although Halt seemed to be quite fond of it. This time, however, it seemed that he'd been genuinely musing to himself as he read through a new report, one of the oak-leaf-crested ones, Will noted. Now the ranger looked up, a little surprised that Will had addressed him.
What's that? He said.
Will shrugged. Sorry, when you said, that's odd, I thought you were talking to me.
Halt shook his head several times, still frowning at the report in his hand.
No, he said, a trifle distractedly. I was just reading this...
His voice trailed away, and he frowned thoughtfully. Will, his curiosity roused, waited expectantly.
What is it? He finally ventured to ask.
As the ranger turned those dark eyes on him, he instantly wished he hadn't. Halt regarded him for a second or two.
Curious, are you? He said at length,
and when Will nodded uncomfortably, he went on in an unexpectedly milder tone.
Well, I suppose that's a good trait for a ranger's apprentice. After all, that's why we tested you with that paper in the Baron's office.
You tested me?
Will set the heavy copper kettle down by the door.
You expected me to try to see what it said?
Halt nodded.
Would have been disappointed if you hadn't.
Also, I wanted to see how you'd go about it.
Then he held up a hand to forestall the torrent of questions that were about to tumble out of Will's mouth.
We'll discuss that later, he said,
glancing meaningfully at the kettle and the other pots. Will stooped to retrieve them, and turned back to the house once more. But curiosity still burned in him, and he turned to the ranger again.
So, what does it say?
He asked, nodding toward the report. Again, there was a silence as Halt regarded him, perhaps assessing him. Then he said,
Lord Northolt is dead, apparently killed by a bear last week while out hunting.
Lord Northolt?
Will asked. The name was vaguely familiar to him, but he couldn't place it.
Former Supreme Commander of the King's Army,
Halt told him, and Will nodded, as if he had known this. But, since Halt seemed to be answering his questions, he was emboldened to continue.
What's so odd about it?
After all, bears do kill people from time to time.
Halt nodded.
True. But I would have thought Cordham Fief was a little far west for bears. And I would have thought Northolt was too experienced a hunter to go after one alone.
He shrugged, as if dismissing the thought.
But then again, life is full of surprises and people do make mistakes.
He gestured toward the kitchen again, indicating that the conversation was over.
When you've put those away, you might like to clean out the fireplace, he said.
Will moved to do as he was told, but a few minutes later, as he walked past one of the windows to the large fireplace that took up most of one wall in the living room, he glanced out to see the ranger tapping the report thoughtfully on his chin, his thoughts obviously a long way away. 8. Sometime late in the afternoon, Holt finally ran out of jobs for Will. He looked around the cabin, noting the gleaming kitchen implements, the spotless fireplace, the thoroughly swept floor, and totally dust-free rug. A stack of firewood lay beside the fireplace, and another stack, cut and split into shorter lengths, filled the wicker basket beside the kitchen stove.
Not bad, he said. Not bad at all.
Will felt a surge of pleasure at the sparing praise, but before he could feel too pleased with himself, Holt added,
Can you cook, boy?
Cook, sir? Will asked uncertainly. Holt raised his eyes to some unseen superior being.
Why do young people invariably answer a question with another question?
He asked. Then, receiving no reply, he continued,
Yes, cook. Prepare food so that one might eat it. Make meals. I assume you do know what food is, what meals are.
Yes, Will answered, careful to take any questioning inflection out of the word.
Well, as I told you this morning, this is no grand castle. If we want to eat food here, we have to cook food here,
Holt told him. There was that word we again, Will thought. Every time so far that Holt had said we must, it had seemed to translate to mean you must.
I can't cook, Will admitted,
and Holt clapped his hands and rubbed them together.
Of course you can't. Most boys can't. So I'll have to show you how. Come on.
He led the way to the kitchen and introduced Will to the mysteries of cooking, peeling and chopping onions, choosing a piece of beef from the meat safe, trimming it and cutting it into neat cubes, then chopping vegetables, searing the beef in a sizzling pan, and finally adding a generous dash of red wine and some of what Holt called his secret ingredients. The result was a savoury-smelling stew, simmering on the top of the stove. Now, as they waited for the dinner to be ready, they sat on the veranda in the early evening and talked quietly.
The Rangers were founded over 150 years ago, in King Herbert's reign. Do you know anything about him?
Holt looked sideways at the boy sitting beside him, tossing the question out quickly to see his response. Will hesitated. He vaguely remembered the name from history lessons in the ward, but he couldn't remember any details. Still, he decided he'd try to bluff his way through it. He didn't want to look too ignorant on his first day with his new master.
Oh, yes, he said. King Herbert, we learned about him.
Really? Said the ranger expansively. Perhaps you could tell me a little about him.
He leaned back and crossed his legs, getting himself comfortable. Will cast about desperately in his memory, trying to remember even a shred of detail about King Herbert. He'd done something, but what?
He was... He hesitated, pretending to gather his thoughts.
The king?
That much he was sure of, and he glanced at Holt to see if he could stop now. Holt merely smiled and made a rolling gesture with his hand that meant,
Go on.
He was the king 150 years ago, Will said, trying to sound certain of his facts.
The ranger smiled at him, gesturing for him to continue yet again.
Well, I seem to recall that he was the one who founded the Ranger Corps, he said hopefully.
And Holt raised his eyebrows in mock surprise.
Really? You recall that, do you?
He said,
and Will had a horrible moment where he realized that Halt had merely said the Rangers were founded during his reign, not necessarily by him. When I say he founded the Rangers, I actually mean he was the king when the Ranger Corps was founded, he said. 150 years ago? Halt prompted. Will nodded emphatically. That's right. Well, that's remarkable, seeing how I just told you those facts a minute or so ago, the Ranger said, his eyebrows coming down like thunderclouds over his eyes. Will thought it might be better if he had said nothing. Finally, the Ranger said in a milder tone, Boy, if you don't know something, don't try to bluff your way through it. Simply tell me I don't know. Is that clear? Yes, Halt, Will said, eyes downcast. There was a silence. Then he said, Halt?
Yes.
About King Herbert, I don't really know, Will admitted. The Ranger made a small snorting noise.
Well, I never would have guessed, he said. But I'm sure you'll remember when I tell you that he was the one who drove the northern clans back over the border into the Highlands.
And, of course, the moment he mentioned it, Will did remember. King Herbert was known as the father of modern Araluen. He had banded the 50 fiefs together into a powerful union to defeat the northern clans. Will could see a way to regain a little credit in Halt's eyes now. If he mentioned the father of modern Araluen title, maybe the Ranger would.
He's sometimes known as the father of modern Araluen, Halt was saying, and Will realized he'd left it too late. He created the union between the 50 fiefs that's still our structure today.
I sort of remember that now, Will put in. He thought the addition of sort of helped it sound as if he wasn't just being wise after the event. Halt looked at him, one eyebrow raised, then continued.
At the time, King Herbert felt that to remain safe, the kingdom needed an effective intelligence force.
An intelligent force, said Will.
Not intelligent. Intelligence. Although it does help if your intelligence force is also intelligent. Intelligence is knowledge of what your enemies, or your potential enemies, are up to. What they're planning, what they're thinking. If you know that sort of thing in advance, you can usually come up with a plan to stop them. That's why he founded the Rangers, to keep the kingdom informed, to act as the eyes and ears of the kingdom.
How do you do that? Will asked, his interest aroused now. Halt noted the change in tone, and a momentary gleam of approval touched his eyes.
We keep our eyes and ears open. We patrol the kingdom and beyond. We listen, we observe, we report back.
Will nodded to himself, thinking. Then he asked, Is that the reason why you can make yourselves invisible? Again, the Ranger felt that moment of approval and satisfaction, but he made sure the boy didn't notice it.
We can't make ourselves invisible, he said. People just think we can. What we do is make ourselves very hard to see. It takes years of learning and practice to do it properly, but you already have some of the skills required.
Will looked up, surprised. I do.
When you crossed the castle yard last night, you used the shadows and the movement of the wind to conceal yourself, didn't you?
Will nodded.
Yes.
He'd never met anyone before who actually understood his skill for moving without being seen.
Halt continued. We use the same principles to blend into the background, to use it to conceal us, to become part of it.
I see, said Will slowly.
The trick is to make sure that nobody else does, Halt told him.
For a moment, Will thought the Ranger had made a joke, but when he looked up, Halt was as grim-faced as ever.
How many rangers are there? He asked. Hort and the Baron had referred more than once to the Ranger Corps, but Will had only ever seen one, and that was Hort.
King Herbert established the corps at 50, one for each of the 50 fiefdoms. I'm based here. My colleagues are based at the other 49 castles throughout the kingdom.
In addition to providing intelligence about potential enemies, rangers are the law keepers, said Holt.
We patrol the fiefdom assigned to us and make sure that the laws are being obeyed.
I thought Baron Harold did that, Will put in. Holt shook his head.
The Baron is a judge, he said. People bring their complaints to him so he can settle them. Rangers enforce the law. We take the law out to the people. If a crime has been committed, we look for evidence. We're particularly suited to that role, since people often don't realise we're around. We investigate to see who's responsible.
What happens then? Will asked. Holt gave a small shrug.
Sometimes we report back to the Baron of the Fief, and he'll have the person arrested and charged. Sometimes, if it's a matter of urgency, we just deal with it.
What do we do? Will asked, before he could stop himself. Holt gave him a long, considering look.
Not too much, if we've only been an apprentice for a few hours, he replied.
Those of us who've been rangers for 20 years or more tend to know what to do without asking.
Oh, said Will, suitably chastened.
Holt continued.
Then, in times of war, we act as special troops, guiding the armies, scouting before them, going behind enemy lines to cause the enemy grief, and so on.
He glanced down at the boy.
It's a bit more exciting than working on a farm.
Will nodded.
Perhaps life as a ranger's apprentice was going to have its appeal after all.
What sort of enemies? He asked. After all, Castle Redmond had been at peace for as long as he could remember.
Enemies from within and without, Holt told him.
People like the Scandian Sea Raiders, or Morgareth and his Wargalls.
Will shivered, recalling some of the more lurid stories about Morgareth, the Lord of the Mountains of Rain and Night.
Holt nodded somberly as he saw Will's reaction.
Yes, he said. Morgareth and his Wargalls are definitely people to be worried about. That's why the Rangers keep an eye on them. We like to know if they're gathering, if they're getting ready for war.
Still, said Will, as much to reassure himself as for any other reason. The last time they attacked, the Baron's armies made mincemeat out of them.
That's true, Holt agreed, but only because they'd been warned of the attack.
He paused and looked meaningfully at Will.
By a ranger? The boy asked.
Correct. It was a ranger who brought word that Morgareth's Wargalls were on their way, then led the cavalry across a secret ford so they could flank the enemy.
It was a great victory, Will said.
It certainly was, and all due to a ranger's alertness and skill, and knowledge of back trails and secret paths.
My father died in that battle, Will added in a quieter voice, and Holt cast a curious look at him.
Is that so? He said.
He was a hero, a mighty knight, Will continued.
The ranger paused, almost as if he were deciding whether to say something or not.
Then he simply replied, I wasn't aware of that.
Will was conscious of a sense of disappointment. For a moment, he'd had a feeling that Holt knew something about his father, that he could tell him the story of his heroic death. He shrugged to himself.
That was why I was so keen to go to battle school, he said finally, to follow in his footsteps. You have other talents, Holt told him,
and Will remembered the Baron saying much the same thing to him the previous night.
Holt, he said. The ranger nodded for him to continue. I was sort of wondering,
The Baron said you chose me.
Hort nodded again, saying nothing.
And both of you say I have other qualities. Qualities that make me suitable to be a ranger's apprentice.